Wondering if you should stay in Illinois or move out of state? Get your copy of Scott Tucker's book, Escape Illinois, Should I Stay or Should I Go? Get your complimentary copy at retirementdakota.com.
Investment advisory services are made available through AE Wealth Management, LLC, a registered investment advisor.
John Hansen in for John Williams on the Wintrust Business Lunch now. And if you listen to Your Money Matters, you know that when Craig Bolanos comes on, he comes on obviously after the market ends, closes for the day. He comes on the show at 6 o'clock, which airs Monday through Thursday. Craig knows this well, so do our listeners. He is 18 for 19 coming on days in which the market is in the green. That's an incredible record. 18 and 1 when Craig is on the calendar, it's a winning day. I don't know if you have a similar record on the Wintrust Business Lunch, Craig, but we got to do something here today. We're flat.
John, you're right. Hey, we might be flat, but at least two of the three major indexes in the green, and perhaps by the time this radio bit ends, we'll get the 8 points back in the Dow to turn it positive. But thank you for the acknowledgement of the record. I do appreciate it. Yeah. And I do think the bottom line is everyone is sitting here waiting. Everyone has been fretting, wringing their hands over the recession. I feel like it's been 11 months now, and it still hasn't shown up. Is the glass half full? Is the glass half empty? Why does this market refuse to head for a nosedive? I don't know. I'll let you lead us into the conversation on the business hour.
That's a great point, right? I think we've been prognosticating this recession so long, there comes a point where we go, is it actually happening? And a lot of people have admitted if there is one, maybe it'll be mild, or they guess that. And, you know, we don't know where it's going. But here this week, and this was before I saw the Tesla or the AT&T earnings reports, which were weaker than expected, but I saw a stat that 86% at that point of the earnings that had come in had come up better than expected, and to the tune of, on average, 6% better than expected. And a lot of their guidances were better. I guess I'm kind of surprised that we don't see much of a rally this week. Is there any sense of why that could be, why good news is no news right now?
How is good news no news? I would even argue bad news seems like no news right now. You just mentioned AT&T and Tesla. So here's the thing. So if there's ever been a legitimate chance for a very mild recession, it's right now. And I think we can look back and understand now that it's probably all because of the pandemic stimulus and the tight jobs market. You know, everyone who thinks this is a repeat of the dot-com bubble, those who think it's a repeat of the Great Recession, we have to understand that the dot-com bubble created this massive amount of wealth. And when the bubble burst, all of the industries supported that also went away. In the Great Recession, it was all about this massive expansion of housing, all the industries that supported housing, and when that burst, things went away. But what makes this different is the fact that so much of the growth that has occurred since 2020 is that it's built on the cash that the government handed out, and I'm pretty sure that the cash that the government handed out, unlike tech stocks, unlike housing, that cash just isn't going away. And as a result of that, I think that's why you see things being relatively soft, being relatively benign. And I do think we're going to have a mild slowdown in the months to come, but I just don't see us having financial Armageddon anytime soon.
Let me make the counter argument. I'm usually in line with you, Craig, and I think I am here too, but we're, you know, you're an expert, I'm not. Neither of us have crystal balls. Let's say inflation's stickier and persists maybe around 5%, 4% longer than they think. Maybe the Fed needs to tick up a little bit longer than people give them credit for, or at the very least don't reduce rates like a lot of people are expecting at the end of the year. Let's say they stay steady longer. And let's say we do have a credit crunch in reaction to regional banks being fearful of lending too much money out now after what we saw with SVB, that we have a real credit crunch on small businesses, and the labor market shortens maybe and gets worse than people think. Is there a case to be made for that too? Is that what the bears are hanging their hats on?
Sure, there's a case to be made for that. Heck, you named everything that could happen outside of aliens invading Los Angeles and, of course, the U.S. government defaulting on its debt. Right. We can pile those on, too. But, you know, to that same extent, you're right. A large part of the rally that has ensued this year, a large part of the resurgence that happened again starting in the month of March, is all around this concept of rate hikes following a pause, following a pivot, and then equaling a cut. And the most dangerous thing right now is that the inflation actually gets ingrained right here, or Worst case, the inflation has to go up, causing the Fed to continue to tighten further than what anything has been priced in. And you know what? Time's going to tell. Clarity comes from time. But if you're asking for what I'm hoping for, yeah, I absolutely believe Jerome Powell and his band of brothers should go ahead and raise rates again in the month of May. I want some additional financial tightening because I do know this. I would rather go through a temporary economic slowdown in exchange for crushing inflation, because if the inflation becomes permanent, that's not good for me. It's not good for anyone listening. I would rather have a finite, a temporary slowdown, because those, again, they're temporary and finite, not permanent. So we'll have to see what occurs.
See, for example, 1974 to 1982. Craig Bolanos, founder and CEO of Wealth Management Group, with their two locations in Inverness and Downers Grove. You know, Craig, I'm in Downers Grove now. We're neighbors, buddy.
Oh, fantastic. Who doesn't like a little bit of DuPage County?
Yeah. There we go. Okay, I do want to talk a little Disney. They're in the news because of economic reasons, and they're in the news because of political reasons, and those two worlds often intersect, and it makes for complicated business dealings, doesn't it? This is a strange relationship to be acrimonious between the governor of Florida and Disney, which, of course, is a major draw to the state.
It is definitely newsworthy, because you're right. We're not talking about Disney because of a love affair for sports and ESPN, or who doesn't like Star Wars, and you can't be excited enough about the three new movies that are going to be released eventually. But you're right. I mean, Disney finds itself right in the crosshairs of all things Florida politics and what is certainly a beloved governor or a presidential campaign hopeful. I mean, man, they're just going back and forth. But thus far, it does seem to be that Disney has better lawyers than the state of Florida, based on some things that have developed recently.
But politics can impact a business, right? I mean, it's just got to be a tough line to toe, whereas you're the CEO, returning CEO at Disney, seen as, you know, you're trying to turn the ship around already, and now you got to play political games, too. I mean, that's got to be just an extra layer for a business that they really don't want or need.
I don't think they want the coverage. I don't think they want the spotlight. But in the same vein, if it's a business, and Disney is a business, you know, for us, it's about taking a break. For us, it's about getting away. But for them, it is about earnings per share, maintaining ratios and profitability. And what incentives do they have to go ahead and give away any of the favors that they've had? Because Disney does have advantages that Universal and other places do not. So, yeah, I just know this. If I was leadership of the company, this is a very difficult needle to thread, and I just don't think it's going away anytime soon, because if it was, well, you and I wouldn't be talking about it on the Noon Business Hour now, would we?
We would not. All right, let's give some things for some listeners or some takeaways here. Average folks like me and you who are just trying to get some gains on their money here, build for retirement, you know, check their blind spots and make sure that there's nothing too exposed in one way or the other. Where are people putting money? If the stock market's a little too wild of a ride for them, you know, are T-bills still a good option, even though the yields have come down just a hair?
Well, I think T-bills are still a fantastic option for many. There's no doubt this is also the last call, legitimately the last call, for Series I savings bonds and the 6.89% rate that people can grab before that resets down closer to 4. John, you've been passionate about your show, also when you filled in for the other John in this hour, about people laddering in and doing some treasury work. And I think those are all great solutions, because we can go ahead and bide some time to go ahead and develop clarity on whether this economy is going to be soft or whether the landing is going to be hard. But for everybody who's investing for the longer term, remember, we can't just invest up to retirement. We need to invest through retirement, continuing to stay committed to globally diversified portfolios, whether it be in managed products, mutual funds, exchange traded funds, whatever it might be. You know, don't let the news headlines, don't let things scare you. Just take a long-term look at how the stock market has performed through all the trials and tribulations in our life. And I have every reason to believe the laws of physics haven't been repealed. Keep on investing, because higher highs will eventually come. We just don't know how long they're going to take to develop.
You mentioned be globally invested. Okay, I'm an average John here, and I don't know if I am globally invested. I maybe buy some ETFs or I have mutual funds. Do I got to dig through perspectives, or is that something that obviously you could help people out with? Are there tools that people can learn to see, am I invested in other markets? Am I invested in Europe and Southeast Asia? How does someone gain that knowledge?
Well, I think, you know, the good thing is technology has democratized information. And for those who want to do their homework and get intellectual gratification from the process, they just need to go, and whether it's going through prospectuses, whether it's going into online resources that are credible, those are all great opportunities. For everybody else that wants to partner with a financial advisor, I encourage everyone to seek out a fiduciary who's going to ensure that they always put the client's interest first. And if you partner with an advisor, especially one who has the heart of a teacher, I think that's what creates truly collaborative results over time. But here, for all of us, we're all guilty. I think people in every nation are guilty of solely investing in their quote-unquote country of origin. And don't get me wrong, the United States of America has been literally the best place to invest for what seemingly is more than a decade. But at some point in time, I just don't know when, but we're starting to see some shoots of it now, I think people should make sure they have a portfolio that is diversified to ensure they're taking advantage of all the opportunities that might exist around the globe.
I was watching a television program this morning. A former SEC chair, I can't remember the name, I apologize, said that we are way too reliant and in bed with China in terms of economy. He called out Apple for, you know, not only so many sales being so much a percentage of their sales being based in China, but also a lot of their manufacturing in China. And that's certainly an argument to make, and I'm sure there's a lot of merit to it. I'm of the camp that being having global trade partners helps you stop wars. I think there's a lot of economic sense that keeps people from shooting at each other. Craig, where do you fall into those camps? Is it somewhere in the middle?
You know, I'm somewhere in the middle because, you know, as a business, we all recognize how important it is to control our supply chain, especially after the events of 2020 and 2021. And that's why this concept, not of global outsourcing, not this concept of offshoring, this concept of onshoring, bringing the means of production back domestically, is so popular in so many circles in every country, not just the United States. But to the same degree, John, I do think it's important that there is this global supply chain. In the same way, it's kind of like mutually assured destruction. When everybody needs each other, it sometimes helps prevent conflicts from flaring up that might otherwise be there. So I think there again, too, we need to have a balance of the yin and the yang. You kind of got to walk down the middle of the road here to make sure we don't go too far in either one direction.
All right. Got about a minute left. Craig, what are you watching here in the next couple weeks? More inflation data coming in, waiting for the next Fed meeting. What are your eyes on?
Well, you know, no Fed meeting in April. Next Fed meeting comes up in the month of May. I'm really paying attention to earnings, as you mentioned earlier, because it's been a two-horse race for a while. What am I looking for? I'm looking to say, is earnings going to come down faster than inflation? That is the two-horse race that everyone needs to be paying attention to. And right now, earnings are doing okay, as you said, but they're doing okay because we have lower estimates. The inflation's been dropping month after month after month for 8 consecutive months. I guess I'm really focused on that, the earnings and the inflation, and plenty more data to come over the next week or two as we digest those Q1 earnings. And lastly, but not least, I'm just taking a look at the housing market now that we're into the middle of spring. Are we going to continue to see high home prices? And to what degree are we going to see high turnover? But the consumer has been incredibly resilient, and I fully anticipate that not stopping anytime soon, but I do think it is going to slow down a smidge.
Well, we finished, and the NASDAQ and the S&P are oscillating between red and green. Let's call that a victory, Craig Bolanos. Thanks for joining us, my friend.
Great to be with you, John.
Todd Powell joins us now. And Todd, you're going to tell us about if someone's looking to get away, see some really cool part of Americana or beyond, why not do it by the train? It's increasing in popularity from vacations by rail. Todd, thanks for coming on today.
John, thanks for having me. I'm always excited to talk about rail travel and let people know that it's such an extraordinary way to see the landscape, to see the country.
It's like a harken back. I don't know what it is about it that seems so attractive to me. It's peaceful. I'm not waiting in a security line for an airport, schlepping. I don't know. I do find it fascinating. Do people feel a little nostalgic getting on that train?
I think there's a bit of the nostalgia. I think, you know, from Chicago particularly, as we have a rich history when it comes to the railroads, and it's a great railroad city with so many trains coming and going. But, you know, it's more than that. You know, rail travel is really kind of touches people in the ways they want to travel today. It's experiential. It connects people with local people. It's about the journey. It's just not about getting on a plane and landing in a destination. It really is about the journey. And frankly, people, they love trains.
Yeah, we do. And just tell me how it works then. Are there vacations that you can take from Chicago that go beyond? Are there vacations I need to fly to and then get on a train for a week? Walk us through a few of the varieties you have.
Well, yeah. So we have over 400 different itineraries for people, whether they want to do group travel or independent travel, going to U.S. national parks, Canada, Europe, and beyond. So out of Chicago, people, our groups meet at Union Station, and then they take the trains such as the Southwest Chief or the Empire Builder. California's offered to places like Glacier National Park, where they might do one of our tours, where they'll go to Yellowstone, Glacier, and then we'll motor coach them to Yellowstone, Grand Tetons, Bryce Island. Be on something like our America's Treasures and Natural Wonders, or our Mount Rushmore Badlands in the Yellowstone, where people can then go take the California Zephyr out and then motor coach to see these national parks. People also fly to go to Canada to take the iconic Canadian that goes trans-Canada or see the Canadian Rockies, or they'll fly to go to Scotland to experience the trains like the Jacobite train, or Switzerland, where train travel just seems to be in the Swiss DNA.
Probably making a broad assumption here, but I think you guys don't own the trains themselves, right, or operate the rail lines. Are you just connecting the dots, which is hugely helpful for people to discover how to make an itinerary that works for what they want to do?
Right. So at Vacations by Rail, we really are the trusted authority on rail and the global leader. And so we have this deep knowledge of the railways. And so we make it easy for people putting together well-planned itineraries, whether people want to travel by themselves and see specific sites or take specific lines, or if they want to travel with a group of like-minded travelers with a tour manager that can take them along the way. So, you know, because particularly in the United States, not a lot of people have exposure to trains, to have Vacations by Rail there to put it together, to make it easy, and then provide the outstanding customer service and support pre, during, and post-travel. It really is a feather in people's cap when they decide to take a train trip.
I imagine most people, they get one of the sleeper cars, right? Because we're talking about sometimes long trips.
Oh, for sure. So, okay. You know, when you look at something like the Canadian, for example, if you're going to do it all the way between Toronto and Vancouver, you know, that's four nights on the train. And I will tell you, having a sleeping accommodation on the train is the way to do it. You have your private compartment. And for me, there's nothing more magical than getting up in the morning, going to the dining car, having breakfast, having your coffee as that moving artwork, which is the scenery outside the window, continues to change as you're going through the various sceneries and parts of the countries.
When it comes to costs, how often or how much do they compare? And I know each one is so individualized, but just like generally speaking, is it cheaper to go by a rail train through the Canadian wilderness or wherever you're going, Vancouver to Toronto, than having to fly to Toronto, fly to another location, fly to a third one and back? Like, can Vacations by Rail be an economical decision for people as well as an enjoyable one?
Well, our trips include, hotels, sightseeing, and the train itself. And the trips range anywhere from $850 per person to $3,500 and up, depending on how you want to do it. And, you know, to compare the train to an airplane, it's not really a fair analysis, because when you're sleeping on the train, it has your hotel room on there, it has your meals. So you really have to look at it more holistically than just transportation. The people, they come to us, they're really looking for that experience of taking a train journey.
763 chimed in. Maybe you can help answer this question. What's the bathroom and shower situation on a train if you're staying there for 4 days and 4 nights?
Well, Well, it depends on the train. So, for example, if you're doing an Amtrak bedroom on the train, one of their bedrooms, that bedroom will have an in-room sink, toilet, and shower. The Canadian, for example, that has an in-room sink and toilet, but they have depending on the class of service, you'll have a shared shower at the end of the hall. But they're in there always cleaning it and putting in fresh towels and so forth. And then if you go with things like the prestige class, their upscale classes of service or luxury trains, many times there are showers in the compartment as well.
You started this company nearly 20 years ago. Why? What drove you to want to do this?
Well, I fell in love with train travel when I was studying overseas. My first train trip was from Rome up to Interlaken, Switzerland, when I was in my early 20s. And when that train came out of the tunnel in the Swiss Alps, and there's all this snow, and I see the little Swiss chalets with the smoke kind of whooshing out of the chimneys, I just fell in love with it. And I thought there really is no other way. And I really wanted to make it easy for people to have this experience. And it really has caught on in a big way.
All right. Well, I got to ask you, since you're here, you've traveled by rail for Europe. You offer those options. Do we need to do a little bit better on setting up some better rail system here in the United States?
Absolutely. I think Europe is really, I think when people think about rail travel, they think about Europe, how it's you connect city center to city center. And so they have an outstanding infrastructure. I mean, the Northeast Corridor here in the United States, it's really come along with the high-speed trains like the ESL Express. And I know Amtrak's doing investments in some of the equipment and sleeping accommodations, but they're using the freight lines track. So the infrastructure could use some improvement, but when you're on a long distance train there in the United States, there is really no better way to see the country.
I did the Channel last summer, and that was really cool. I've done the I studied abroad, luckily, amazingly privileged experience to be in Europe and Italy when I was in my young 20s, going between Madrid and Barcelona at 300 kilometers per hour, and it is a really great way to see any country, and especially ours, too. Someone wanted to know, do you do senior or AARP discounts, or is it kind of a flat rate all around?
Yeah, so we're actually AARP's preferred rail supplier. So for AARP members, you should definitely check in with us. And a lot of our trips are made for 50 plus, and so our escorted tours are independent. I mean, they're really, and I really call them an accessible adventure, because the adventure really begins the moment you board the train. So it's really a great trip for all ages.
And what's your favorite one, route, or is that like choosing between kids?
Oh, my gosh, it's impossible. It's almost like the last train I was on is my favorite, because they're all so unique in their own experiences and personalities. Anytime I can just be on a train, having a cup of coffee, watching the scenery, interacting with the people, it's really special.
I even like the express train from Downers Grove to Chicago on the Metro. I'm sure I'd love across the country. I love trains. A lot of people do. Vacations by rail. Where can people go for more information, Todd?
Go to vacationsbyrail.com, vacationsbyrail.com, and you can browse over 400-plus trips around the world.
Todd, this is cool stuff. I'd love to do one. We'll talk soon, okay?
Okay, thank you, John.
All right, for more business news, let's go to Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. The latest report on home prices in the Chicago area is a mixed bag. Illinois Realtors says home prices dropped in Chicago while remaining flat in the greater Chicago area. Home prices have dropped for five straight months in Chicago, with the median price now at $334,000 after falling 3.2% last month. Dropping single-family home prices drove the decline. Single-family home prices are down nearly 9% compared to a year ago. Home prices were flat for the nine-county metropolitan area, with the median price at $310,000. More McDonald's franchisees are backing legislation that would give them more power over how to run their restaurants. The Wall Street Journal reports the store owners are upset with changes in ownership rules. Arizona and Arkansas are two of the states where legislation is moving forward. Arkansas recently signed a bill into law. The report says the bills are being pushed by a small but vocal group of franchisees. Chicago-based McDonald's opposes the legislation. The company has made changes to its franchisee standards and rules in recent months. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
The business of food, Steve Alexander.
Thank you, and it's a Mr. Fizz Friday, and he'll be talking about the holiday weekend after I tell you we are sponsored by the Chevy Silverado HD. Experience your life in HD. Visit ChevyDriveChicago.com. Okay, gardening guru Jim Fizzell, what's on your Mr. Fizz calendar?
Well, Steve, we have a really interesting week coming up here. It starts off tomorrow with Earth Day. Actually, the week when I was a it was called Cleanup Week. And it's the same thing now. We'll have Earth Day celebrations tomorrow and this weekend and all week at the Forest Preserves. There'll be demonstrations. Schools will be having programs and local park districts as well. And you can help out yourself by just going out and cleaning up your grounds, recycling the garden trash. And if you have the opportunity, go out and clean up along the roadsides. I know a lot of churches and park districts and so forth are soliciting people to volunteer and go out and do that. So if you have a chance, it's a good way to get out and enjoy the air outdoors and feel good about what you're doing.
Yeah, and don't forget the gloves and maybe the sunscreen. Not a lot of sun in the forecast, though. You have next Friday circled on your calendar?
Oh, yeah. Arbor Day, an important day as far as I'm concerned, being in that kind of a business. We do need to plant trees. Trees provide shade. They're natural air conditioners. And trees protect us from the winter winds. They provide inviting surroundings, a feeling of security. And if you remember what the inner city, particularly here in Chicago, when I was a child, there were no trees in the city. Now there are a lot of them. If our forefathers had not planted trees, our towns wouldn't have them right now, so we need to do the same thing. If you're going to replace one of the trees that was lost by some of the diseases or bugs in the past, good time to do it. There are a lot of kinds to choose from at your nurseries right now. Important that you should buy from a locally grown tree nursery. Then you're pretty sure you're going to get something that will survive here. If you see some of these trees that have come in from elsewhere, you could get a redbud where the seed was collected in Florida or it was collected in northern Minnesota. The trees that grow from those seeds are not going to do well here. They're actually different varieties, although they go by the same name.
Mr. Fizz, Jim Fizzell, from the farm to your belly. Today is National Chocolate-Covered Cashews Day. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
Just reading a story in Crane Chicago Business, actually, about State Farm hiking auto rates again for the second time this year. This has been a big topic of conversation. We've had it a bunch on the Your Money Matters program that I host Monday through Thursday at 6 p.m. And Allstate is not the only one that is hiking rates. But I've dived into this. Steve Daniels wrote this story for Crane Chicago Business, and he writes all of these for the insurance companies, but of course, State Farm, based out of Bloomington, there's been a lot of fighting in Springfield about the rates and the differences between them. Many states put regulations, and they have regulatory boards that have to approve insurance hikes above a certain amount, right? So if a company says, hey, you know, and for good reason, right? We have all these claims, we're going to lose money unless we can hike the rates. Here's the percentage we want. There's a regulatory board that then looks over those insurance rate hikes and determines whether or not that's allowed. They also do a lot in terms of looking at ways of how credit is done. So insurance carriers can look at your credit score and determine how much to charge you. That's disallowed in many states, but it is still allowed in Illinois. So again, they think that your credit score is a prognosticator of perhaps how good or bad you are as a driver, and maybe perhaps more accurately how more likely or less likely you are to pay a claim or pay a deductible, something like that. And a lot of states have outlawed that, and I'm always curious what people think about that, because it always seems a little strange to me that they would pull your credit as an avenue to determine how much car insurance you should pay. I don't know. That doesn't seem entirely fair to me, but when you look at the tables that they do and they pour into the data, they say there is a direct correlation between credit score and likeliness of you paying back what you owe an insurance company, paying deductibles, or just getting in car crashes too. Curious about that. But State Farm hiking their auto insurance prices in Illinois by 6% on average, just 5 weeks after a 6.5 average hike took effect. That'll take effect into June 5th. The new rates will add about $56 a month to the average policy, or excuse me, $56 a year. That's important. Last month's rate hike meant $58 a year. So you're looking at about $114 on average. I'm only mentioning State Farm because it's the story that broke today, but other ones are doing the same thing. They blame inflationary pressure, supply chain issues, higher claim costs, all continue to drive up the rate. They're making adjustments to ensure that they price in the risk. And we'll have to see. They didn't respond, though, to a question about whether State Farm had filed for multiple rate hikes in any other states so far. Just right now, Illinois, it looks like. Raising prices isn't surprising. State Farm posted the largest net loss in their history back in 2022. They're a mutual insurer technically owned by the policyholders, so it's not subject to shareholder pressures felt by rivals like Allstate. And as a result, Steve Daniels writes, State Farm has been slower to respond to claims inflation, and that has affected the entire industry. That has led to some of the steepest rate hikes in memory. Okay, someone wanted to know, this is a great question for the 847, John, how much of the rate increases are related to the increased value of cars and the aggressive driving we're seeing today? So the first part, what a great point. We're paying more for cars. If the car gets totaled and they have to get you a new car, that car costs a lot more. So yeah, I think that's the inflationary pressures they're talking about. As to the second part, aggressive driving, is that driving rates up? I don't know. I would imagine that they've seen a lot of claims. We've talked a lot about how isn't traffic even higher and worse? Aren't people rage driving even more than they were before? I don't know. I'm sure that plays a role in that sort of line of thinking. So anyways, I'm sure if you drive a car, you have noticed your rates going up and growing up a lot more. Someone was chiming in again about the bathroom situation on the trains in reference to the last guest we had. That they do bring in fresh towels and they do have don't have crews to clean them. I guess it just depends on which train line. I didn't realize that if you went across the country in one of those, you had your own room, that you had your own bathroom on the train on Amtrak. That sounds like I didn't know that. Your own bathroom on the train, I'll take that.
Try that on a 777. Yeah.
Well, we're kind of going there. I do want to. Do you ever look at those videos where people fly in the pod overseas? That just looks like a dream.
I have not seen those videos. No,
just look like behind the scenes. Oh yeah. My god, I can't stand. Like, honestly, I know it's only an 8-hour flight or whatever to Paris, and you know I've been lucky enough to do it once or twice. But man, oh man, that does make such a difference to be able to. I can't sleep sitting up. That's my problem.
Right. Neither can I.
And then I wait, and then you're in Europe, and you're all a grog.
Oh yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
That first day is never really a day.
Yeah, for sure.
My husband and I did the train thing.
Oh, how was it?
It was 25 years ago. I mean, it was a long time ago, but we had the sleeper little car with the toilet and the sink in the same room. And I just remember sleeping on the top bunk thinking, if I fall off this bed, I will be in the toilet. I was so nervous because
like
the train was going so fast.
Yeah.
You know, it was the middle of the night and we were going out east. We were going to Philadelphia, I believe.
Oh, nice.
And we just decided before we had kids to do that. I don't know how they are now, but back then it was cool. But
that was cool.
Yeah, it was like a one-time thing.
Yeah. Well, maybe check out this new one there.
Yes, this sounds really
and
awesome.
Trips to Europe, too.